This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, so Talkspace wants guys to know that being prepared for life's biggest challenges and opportunities means prioritizing mental health, too. Talkspace can help you go beyond fine-tuned workouts, supplements, and productivity hacks. Talkspace can help you fine-tune your inner life so you can succeed in being the best version of yourself in any situation. And with Talkspace, you can get therapy from anywhere and on your time. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Men's Health Awareness Month is the perfect time to reach out to Talkspace. Now, get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SPACE80.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Imagine standing right at the threshold, yeah. A small, weather-beaten cabin. The raw salt air, it actually stings your eyes, cuts right through the jungle humidity.
Thick air. Oppressive.
And then this wave, like a profound nausea, just washes over you, twists your stomach. It's way beyond just feeling sick.
A physical revulsion, almost.
Exactly. And the door, it's all weathered, scarred up. It swings open, and the sound, this low, slow groan, like a coffin lid.
Ugh, chilling.
Before you can even really process it, a figure just bursts out from the darkness inside, a silhouette.
Against deeper gloom, yeah.
And this immediate, like, primal terror just grabs you, colder, more absolute than anything you've ever felt.
Instant fear.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're not just, you know, telling a story. We're trying to peel back the layers of this really baffling legend.
The account of Crash Island.
And the transformed man, Grant Theft Auto. This isn't just about survival. It's this unsettling journey into, well, inexplicable change.
Human transformation under extreme duress.
And the most perplexing part, the disappearance. An entire place just gone, leaving only questions, really. And these weird echoes in the official records.
So for this deep dive, we're stepping into, let's say, the investigator and skeptic roles. We're looking really closely at the fragments we have, the testimonies.
To piece it together.
Exactly. Our mission is to understand these core elements. Mm. Extreme isolation, what that does. It's a nerving idea of human transformation.
And the most baffling thing, maybe, places that just seem to erase themselves from the map.
Yeah. We'll try to connect the dots, but also, you know, question the shadows. Weigh the story against maybe more grounded possibilities.
Okay, so let's set the scene. Our journey starts in a specific time, the late 1940s. And that's not just background noise.
No, not at all. It's crucial context. The world was in flux, still reeling from the war.
Societies were rebuilding, people moving everywhere. Soldiers, refugees, and prisoners.
Right. Justice systems were recalibrating. And importantly, technology wasn't what it is now.
No satellites tracking everything, no advanced radar everywhere. Vast parts of the ocean were genuinely remote, unmonitored.
Which speaks directly to the vulnerability of an operation like this, transporting prisoners back then.
Air travel itself was still, well, riskier. Less reliable planes, often older ones used for these kinds of flights.
And they deliberately used less traveled routes, often for security. Avoiding population centers.
Which meant if something went wrong.
Communication was limited. The distances were huge. Search and rescue wasn't the immediate coordinated thing we expect today.
So if a plane went down in a remote spot.
It could genuinely stay lost. For a long, long time. Maybe forever. The isolation wasn't just bad luck. It was almost baked into the system back then.
And disaster did strike. Brutally, unexpectedly. The prison transport plane carrying over 100 inmates.
A real mix of people bound by confinement.
It crash lands on a remote, uninhabited island. The sources are clear on this. It was way off any known shipping lanes. Nowhere near civilization.
A tiny speck in the Pacific, essentially.
The impact. Catastrophic. Just ripped the plane apart. And out of all those people, only a small group, maybe around 30 men, survived the initial crash.
Pulled from the wreckage by sheer luck. Or maybe just pure desperation.
And among this group, this desperate band of survivors, was a man named Grant Heftado.
Yeah, the records mentioned him specifically. Involved in a car theft ring. Which sounds maybe minor, but tells you something.
Like what? Resourceful.
Exactly. Resourceful, probably cunning, used to operating outside the rules, assessing situations quickly, getting what he needed.
Skills that might be useful in a survival situation.
Paradoxically, yeah.
Yeah.
Criminal skills could become assets when there are no rules left. Or they could just breed mistrust. Old scores, you know.
Because any hierarchy, they had just vanished in the crash.
Instantly obliterated. It's yeah. Pure anarchy. And for guys like this, the veneer of civilization might have already been pretty thin. Yeah. This would strip it away completely.
So for the first few days, amazingly, there was some sense of order. Even hope.
It's hard to imagine, but yeah. The immediate shock, the trauma of the crash, it kind of gives way.
To what? The expectation of rescue.
Exactly. They believed, they had to believe, help was coming. Soon. Any day now.
And they found supplies in the wreckage.
They did. Emergency rations. Mm. Not much, probably, but enough. It gave them something tangible.
More than just food, maybe. A link to the world.
A powerful psychological anchor, definitely. Something familiar, something that offered a tiny bit of control when everything else was chaos.
So they scavenged. They waited.
Yeah. And psychologists actually talk about this initial honeymoon phase in survival situation.
Honeymoon seems like an odd word for it.
Well, it's when the brain clings to the known world, right? To hope. The focus is on shared survival, keeping spirits up, often underestimating the real long-term danger.
And those rations were key to that phase.
Absolutely critical. More than just calories, they were like a buffer. They allowed the group to hold on to some semblance of normalcy, some cooperation, before the truly desperate stuff kicked in.
A temporary reprieve.
A fleeting moment of collective denial, really. Civilization whispering against the roar of the wild.
But the days kept passing, relentlessly, turning into weeks. And then a whole month.
And the ocean just stayed empty. Mm. Vast. Indifferent. No ships, no planes.
That initial panic, the fear they thought would fade. It didn't. It transformed, right?
Into something deeper, a pervasive dread, that constant gnawing anxiety that just seeps into everything.
And the island itself, it stopped feeling like a refuge.
It became a trap, suffocating. The jungle pressing in, every sunrise without a ship, every sunset bringing another night of fear. It just wore them down, systematically.
That sounds psychologically brutal.
It is. This prolonged isolation, the slow death of hope, leads to what you might call environmental despair.
So it shifts from problem solving, like finding food.
To just waiting. Mm. Passive waiting. Which is often much more destructive mentally. No external input, just the constant threat, the dwindling chances.
It breeds paranoia.
Massively. Old mistrust flares up. Small annoyances become huge deals. Trust evaporates. And the mind, starved for something to focus on, starts creating threats.
Like the island itself becoming evil.
Exactly. It gets personified. It's not just a place anymore. It's an active participant in their suffering, a malevolent force.
And then the food ran out, the emergency rations, their last link.
Gone. And that wasn't just a logistical problem. It was the breaking point.
Because then real hunger kicks in. Absolute hunger.
Unleashing those primal demands. Survival at its most basic. Any illusion of control, any comfort, just gone.
And the civility, the group cohesion.
It frayed. Then it just shredded completely. The pressure of starvation, thirst, it's immense. They weren't just survivors anymore. They were desperate animals.
On the edge of something terrible.
And the lack of food is a powerful catalyst for behavioral change. Much faster than people think.
How so?
Well, basic needs override everything. Morals, social norms, empathy. Mm-hmm. They can all go out the window when the brain is screaming for survival.
So aggression increases. Focus narrows.
Drastically. Studies show it. Empathy plummets. It's just about getting through the next hour, the next day, no matter the cost. And that's crucial for understanding what happens next.
Because then, the disappearances started.
Yeah. A new kind of horror. Not just the elements, not just hunger. Something else.
One by one, prisoners started vanishing. Every night.
There wasn't just one accident. It was a pattern, relentless, chilling, waking up each morning to find someone else just gone.
Without a trace.
Often just footprints ending abruptly. And the really strange part, even Grant Heftado, the resourceful one, vanished initially.
He disappeared too, but he comes back into the story later.
Exactly, which adds another layer of mystery to it all. But at this point, the fear just crystallizes.
Around what, the island's interior?
Yeah, this suspicion that something in there, in the unexplored center, was responsible. Something malevolent, actively taking them.
So not infighting, not just wandering off.
Well, let's bring in the skeptic lens here. The fact is people disappeared. That seems clear. But the how? That's incredibly ambiguous, isn't it?
Really?
Given the conditions, starvation, desperation, paranoia, could it have been internal conflict? Murder over the last scraps of hope or supplies?
Or just delirium, people losing their minds.
Precisely. Wandering off, hallucinating, getting lost in the jungle, succumbing to exposure. It happens in extreme situations.
So the fear of the island's interior might be projection.
It could be. A classic psychological response. When there's no rational explanation, the mind creates one. It projects its terror onto the unknown, gives it a shape, a location, like the dark woods in fairy tales.
Easier to fear a monster in the woods than just formless dread.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
But this phenomenon, this collective myth-making under extreme stress, it's powerful. The mind fills the void.
And the unexplored center of the island became that void.
Became the focus of their terror. Whether it was truly the source or just where they projected their fear.
And by the end of that first month, only a few were left.
Just a handful, which underscores the sheer horror of it all. Whatever the cause, the devastation was immense, an inescapable threat.
So they're desperate, numbers dwindling. What do?
They make this incredibly harrowing decision.
Yeah.
They can't just wait to be next. They have to confront it.
Go inland, towards the place they fear most.
Towards the heart of the island, where everyone vanished, driven by what it? A need for answers? Or just a desperate hope to find some way out?
The fear must have been paralyzing.
Utterly. But the terror of staying put, of waiting for the inevitable, that must have been worse. It propelled them forward, into the unknown.
A final gamble.
It really signifies a shift, doesn't it? From passive endurance, just suffering, to active investigation, however terrifying.
It's a last resort move.
Often is. When all hope of outside help is gone, sometimes the only path left is towards the source of the dread. Confronting it feels, well, more active than just waiting to die.
A search for meaning, maybe, even in the horror?
Or just a final, desperate attempt to regain some control, any control, in a situation that's completely out of control.
So they hike inland, tense, nervous, through thick jungle.
Pushing through the undergrowth, yeah. And then they see it in the distance.
The cabin, small, isolated, man-made.
Utterly out of place in the wild interior. Normally you'd think shelter, help.
But not here, not after everything.
Here, it just screamed dread. Instant visceral dread. It wasn't a sign of hope. It felt like confirmation of their worst fears.
This is it. This is the place.
The focal point of the horror. They knew it, somehow.
Now hold on. That feeling of dread, is it reliable?
That's the skeptic question. Absolutely. Is that overwhelming nausea, that foreboding, is it a reaction to the cabin itself?
Or is it just everything else? The weeks of terror, the starvation, the fear, all hitting them at once when they see this unexpected thing?
Their perception would be intensely colored, wouldn't it? Acute trauma can manifest physically. They believe this was the source, so maybe their bodies reacted to that belief.
The mind projecting horror onto the building?
It's possible. Under that level of duress, the lines blur. Internal terror can feel like an external threat.
But they keep going closer. The air feels heavy, suffocating.
That's the account. Like, the atmosphere itself is wrong. And the nausea intensifies. Real physical revulsion.
Their heads swimming, stomachs churning.
And then that low groan. The door swings open.
And before they can even react, bang, figure bursts out.
Not a slow reveal, just immediate explosive terror, pure instinct kicking in.
And the figure lunges, chases them.
Relentlessly. Back towards the beach, a frantic, chaotic scramble for their lives.
This pure flight mode.
Now, that detail about the overwhelming nausea, it's compelling.
Why? Because it feels so physical.
Exactly. It could be psychosomatic, yes. Extreme stress causing a physical reaction. Happens all the time. But it could also be a genuine physical reaction to something emanating from that place or that figure. An indescribable smell, maybe. Something unsettling on a primal sensory level.
Grounds the story in something visceral.
It does. Makes it harder to dismiss as just panic or hallucination. It adds this layer of horrifying authenticity. Suggests the threat was real enough to affect them physically.
So they run, blind terror, back through the jungle.
A chaotic scramble, adrenaline pushing them.
They finally make it back to the beach, catch their breath, try to regroup.
But the horror isn't over. They do a head count.
And someone's missing.
One of their group, gone, lost in that frantic chase back from the cabin.
So even escaping didn't guarantee safety. The island still claimed someone.
Relentless. Terrifying.
But hang on. During a chase like that, blind panic.
Yeah, the skeptic steps in again.
Yeah.
How reliable is their account of how that person went missing?
Everyone's focused on just running, right? Not watching everyone else.
Exactly. In that chaos, could someone have just gotten disoriented, taken a wrong turn, stumbled, fallen behind, succumbed to exhaustion?
The jungle's disorienting anyway.
Notoriously so. So being taken by the pursuer might be the narrative they constructed later. The reality could be a tragic but more mundane consequence of the frantic escape.
The mechanism is obscured by the panic.
Definitely. The missing person adds to the horror, no question. But how they went missing? There's room for doubt there. Plausible, more grounded explanations exist.
So they're back on the beach, shaken. Fewer now. And they start talking. Whispering, probably.
Trying to piece together what they saw in those fleeting, terrified glimpses during the chase.
And they come to a realization. A horrifying one.
It wasn't just a man who chased them. It wasn't a stranger.
He was Grant Heftado.
The car thief. The fellow survivor. The one who had initially disappeared himself.
And the consensus was, he had turned.
That phrase, he had turned. It's incredibly potent, isn't it?
What does it imply, do you think? More than just gone mad.
It suggests something fundamental. Irreversible, maybe? Mm-hmm. A transformation of his actual nature. Not just desperate violence, not just psychosis. Something deeper.
Like he wasn't human anymore.
That seems to be the implication. Someone alien primal. And the fact it was a collective recognition gives it weight. Not just one guy's delusion. They all saw it. Felt it.
A shift from familiar to monstrous?
Right. It forces you to confront that thin line. Civilization versus instinct. How much pressure does it take to cross it? Heftado, defined by his past, was utterly reshaped by the island. The chase changed the player.
But again, terrified witnesses fleeing for their lives.
The pragmatic view, exactly. Their interpretation could be skewed massively.
Could Heftado's actions, however brutal, have been misinterpreted?
Think about it. Extreme self-preservation. Maybe he'd done terrible things to survive while he was missing. Maybe he saw them as a threat to his refuge, his scraps of survival.
And appeared monstrous because of his desperation.
To starving, terrified men, someone pushed to that absolute animalistic edge would seem inhuman. Especially if he was physically degraded, wild-looking, their fear could have painted him as something supernatural.
The lens of terror distorting reality.
We always have to consider the state of the observers. Their narrative is shaped by unimaginable suffering.
Which brings us back to the isolation itself, that crushing weight.
Weeks turning into a month. No rescue. Food gone. People vanishing nightly. It wasn't just physical hardship.
It was a psychological crucible.
Absolutely. Sensory deprivation, social deprivation. It fundamentally warps the mind.
How does that contribute to, well, everything? Heftado's change, the whole dynamic.
Prolonged, inescapable isolation.
Okay.
It does predictable things, psychologically speaking. Okay. Social order breaks down fast. Paranoia skyrockets.
Delusions, hallucinations.
Very common. The brain, starved of normal input, starts creating its own reality, often a threatening one. And when society vanishes, no rules, no validation, no hope, primal instincts surge.
Right and wrong become fluid.
Dictated purely by the need to survive this second, this minute. Morality becomes a luxury you can't afford. The island became this horrific laboratory for extreme human transformation.
Okay, so they've seen Heftado, realized he's turned. They know they can't stay.
Absolute certainty. Staying means death, or worse. Their only option, terrifying as it is.
The open sea.
On a makeshift raft. A near-suicidal gamble, but less terrifying than remaining.
So the next morning, fueled by pure terror.
And sheer will, they start building, scavenging wreckage, lashing planks together. Every knot tied is like a prayer.
Just a desperate push to get away. Anywhere else.
And that act of building the raft? It's significant, isn't it?
How so? More than just practical.
It's reclaiming agency. After being passive victims of the crash, the island, the vanishings, they're finally doing something. Taking their fate, however slim the chance, into their own hands.
A testament to the will to survive.
Even against unimaginable horror, against odds that seem impossible, it's a defiant act against a reality that's become completely unbearable.
So they launch the raft, adrift, days pass.
Just a tiny speck on that enormous ocean. Hope must have been almost gone again.
But then, rescue. A Navy ship spots them.
Against all odds, yeah. They're pulled out.
Yeah.
Rescued from the ordeal. Physically, at least.
They're brought back to civilization, survivors, but scarred.
Carrying that trauma, the nightmares, the questions, the physical part is over. but the psychological horror lingers.
Now, the rescue itself, that's verifiable, a hard fact.
Yes, the rescue by a Navy ship is documented. That part is concrete.
Right.
But we absolutely have to remember the state these men were in. The trauma was immense. So the specific details they reported, the cabin, the chase, Heftado's transformation,
could be colored by that trauma, exaggerated, distorted.
Potentially, yes. Survivor accounts are filtered through extreme stress, fear, suffering. Memory under duress is notoriously unreliable in its specifics, even if the core experience is real to the person.
Their subjective reality might not match objective fact perfectly.
Especially given the starvation, the likely delirium, the chaos, we can't separate the tale from the teller's condition.
But the story doesn't end there, with the rescue.
No, because the most baffling part comes from the official records.
Despite their testimony, despite the clear evidence of a plane crash, missing people.
An extraordinary note appears in the official documentation.
Stating what?
Stating that the island, the crash site, was never found.
Never found. Like that.
Like that. A chilling, bureaucratic dead end. As if the place itself ceased to exist on any map in any follow-up investigation.
Leaving this huge, unfillable gap in the story.
And this never-found declaration, it's absolutely pivotal. It lists the whole thing.
From a survival story to, what, an erasure?
An enduring mystery of inexplicable erasure. Or maybe deliberate obfuscation. It's not just that it was hard to find. It implies the physical location vanished from the records or couldn't be reconciled with known geography.
It challenges the idea of a fixed, recorded world.
Profoundly. It questions the reliability of official records, especially for remote or inconvenient events. What does never found really mean in bureaucracy?
So let's dig into that. Erasure. An entire island, the scene of all this horror, officially never found.
Yeah.
What does that mean for a place to be erased?
Well, connecting it broadly, erasure is deeply unsettling because it undermines our trust in documentation and collective memory. It forces us to ask, what is an official record? How complete is it?
Especially for remote or sensitive areas.
Exactly. Historically, never found could mean several things. Yes, it could be an uncharted island they just couldn't relocate, or bad coordinates from traumatized survivors. That's the mundane explanation.
But it could also be more deliberate.
It could hint at that. Institutional forgetting. Maybe the details were too disturbing or contradicted some other narrative. Sometimes the easiest way to deal with something problematic is to simply fail to record it properly. Or to actively lose the location.
So the absence itself becomes the record.
A chilling testament to something someone wanted hidden, perhaps. The void speaks volumes.
Okay, but let's apply the cautious hedge here, the skeptic view.
Right. While never found sounds definitive and mysterious, let's ground it. Uncharted islands were still a thing in the 40s. Coastlines change. Volcanic islands appear and disappear.
And the survivors' coordinates would have been rough at best.
Wildly inaccurate, most likely. Trauma, starvation, makeshift raft navigation. So never found could genuinely just mean not successfully relocated. Not that the island pulled a disappearing act.
The ambiguity fuels the legend.
Precisely. The legend thrives in that gap between bureaucratic language and the terrifying possibility of actual erasure.
Okay, shifting from the island to the man. Grant Heftado, car thief, survivor, turned. It's so unsettling.
It really is the core of the human horror here.
What does that transformation mean? Primal madness from isolation.
Yeah.
Or something deeper, something that altered his very being.
That phrase, he had turned, it hits hard. It implies more than just changed behavior. It suggests a fundamental shift in nature. Irreversible, maybe.
Like the island broke him down to something pre-human.
Under extreme stress, isolation, people can undergo profound psychological changes. Learned behaviors, societal norms, they can vanish astonishingly quickly. It blurs that line between us and animal.
So was it a reversion? A psychotic break?
Yeah.
Or something else? Something the island did to him?
The story leaves that terrifyingly open. But the idea that the environment, the chase for survival itself, fundamentally changed him first, that's powerful. The island didn't just contain the horror. Maybe it created it within him.
But again, skeptic check. This comes from terrified people running for their lives.
Always circle back to the source. Their interpretation is key. Could a man, pushed to the absolute limit, committing brutal acts simply to survive, appear monstrous?
Especially if he looked wild, degraded.
Absolutely. His actions, seen through the lens of their fear and trauma, could easily be interpreted as something otherworldly, even if born of pure, desperate human survival instinct. We can't objectively know what turned really looked like.
Which underlines the role of isolation again, that sheer weight.
Weeks into a month, no hope, resources gone, nightly terror. It wasn't just physical.
It was a pressure cooker for the mind.
Exactly. It breaks down social bonds, breeds paranoia, induces delusions. Reality itself warps. When all external structures vanish, primal drives take over.
Right and wrong just disappear.
Become dictated purely by the need to survive the next moment. Sensory deprivation adds to it. The brain fills the silence, often with fear. The environment didn't just host the events. It actively shaped them, reshaped the people within it.
So where does this leave us? We've walked through this nightmare. The crash, the vanishings, Heftado's transformation, the island itself disappearing from the records.
It's a story that pushes against our understanding of what can be lost. Lives, yes, but also identity. Even physical places.
Yeah.
It leaves mostly questions.
Unsettling ones.
Definitely. This deep dive doesn't really give us neat answers. It makes us confront the fragility of records, the power of isolation, and the really disturbing possibility that some things just resist explanation.
They slip through the cracks of what we think we know.
Exactly. The line between fact and legend gets incredibly blurry here, leaving this persistent, chilling echo of the inexplicable. Makes you wonder what else is never found.
What stands out for you listening to this, for me, it's maybe how fast things fall apart, how easily certainty dissolves when you face the truly unknown.
And how the official story isn't always the full story, or even the true one. It really invites you to think about those gaps, those erased histories.
What else might be out there, just beyond the edge of the map, beyond our perception, waiting, or just gone?
They looked back for land and saw only water.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.